mean, I'm not blowing my horn, but it's just like, you know, this is severe battle.
I was reading this morning my daily devotional, and it was talking about intercessory prayer. They said intercessory prayer is not that you put yourself in God's place, but you put yourself in the place of the person you're praying for.
That's what's happening.
Then you can truly intercede.
Yeah. Yeah. Say that again.
Don't put yourself, you know, in God's place, like you're God praying for this person, but you're the victim of whatever it is that you're experiencing the same thing, and pray for them. Then you'll have earnest intercessory prayer.
It's kind of like walk a mile in my shoes.
It makes it a lot more personal.
That was in the Psalms that we were talking about. That's why I asked Fritz. Psalms 56 to 60. We discussed the word mikteh. They still don't know exactly what that means, but in those Psalms, David was crying out to God, deliver me, deliver me. I mean, Saul was chasing his butt, almost killed him how many times? It was like a dozen years. And David could have killed him, but he wouldn't.
It don't take much.
And he was crying out to God, God, deliver me from my enemies, you know? It was a cry. That's what I saw.
He never once did he say, hey, I'm supposed to be king, why do I have to do it?
Hey! Who was that bad man?
Better never late. Well, we're done.
This is second shift.
You know, play is only a figment of imagination.
Last week,
I want to do these
whole things. Last week, we talked a little bit about homeless ministry and stuff. And so I went down Friday to the outreach that Al was doing at St. Vincent's, just see what he's doing, man. But he's doing a great job, to be honest with you, man. He, like he would say, he's getting all this little bags that he makes, you know, for the guys when they get out. They're actually there for breakfast. They eat, and as they're leaving, he gives them a little bag for a snack for the day. And but what I liked, what I saw was also that he has like T-shirts and such stuff, you know, sometimes. And what I saw, what I liked was the fact that he actually was talking with the guy. One guy you were praying with when I left, he was on a wheelchair then. So, you know, he's not just slamming bags and giving bags. He's actually ministering to people. So I really like that. So. Kudos for the ministry you're doing there, buddy.
Building relationships.
That's exactly what it is. That's what, you know, I just had a little bit of that. And we've developed probably about 10 or 15 relationships with different people. And the majority of them move on. But there's a small percentage of them that continue to become weekly. And these are people that are working, mowing grass, and doing carpentry work and stuff like that, but they just don't have enough to live. It's the guy that he's talking about lost one leg, and you didn't hear that he got liver cancer.
No.
And he does drink. And he smokes more, but he's down to 2 beers a day and 2 cigarettes a day. I encouraged him, but I told him that I smoked for many, many years, 4 packs a day when I quit. Whoa. And you can't just get down to 2 cigarettes, and you can't get down to 2 beers. You know, you've got to turn it over to God. And let God take over, and when He gets your heart and your mind together, then all things are possible. And I'm curious to see where he's at this coming week when we go today. So I hope that'll get us going. If you guys could keep these, keep this gentleman in prayer.
His name is?
Well, he talked about the intercession. He has liver cancer. His name, his nickname is Tiger. And God knows who Tiger is, that's for sure. So if you keep him in mind, I would appreciate it. Keep him in your prayer.
Okay, here's the deal. Me and Mike and his beautiful wife were having a breakfast right here yesterday. And we were talking in conversation, so as I was talking to him, because he was sitting at that end of the table, looking this way, I noticed that he wasn't paying attention too much. He was trying to, but his eyes was on a little old man that was sitting right here. And I looked over the way, so I saw what he was doing, and I knew something was going on there. And And I knew something was going on there, and Mike kept looking over there, so he said, excuse me, son, I will see him over here. So he came over to the little old man that was standing, sitting here, and the little old man, so Mike asked, are you okay? Can I help you or something like that? Tell the story.
Well, I just felt compelled to talk with you. And it became obvious that several times he had attempted to get out of the city, but he couldn't seem to leave the city. So I went over and I introduced myself and I said, I felt compelled to come over and talk to you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Anyway, as it turns out, he had a little oxygen machine that you carry to breathe. And he was trying to get to his car, but he didn't have the strength to carry the machine. And he had a couple of dollars in his hand.
All of us is good. It's $10.
Anyway, so that was the opportunity to talk to him. And I invited him here in the morning. I was kind of hoping he'd be here, but I understand he has mobility issues now, so I understand why he's not here. But opportunity seeks us out. Opportunity seeks us out.
How many times do we miss that opportunity by saying, well, he's okay. He just needs a little rest. You know, I've done that 1,000 times. I think this, the food ministry that I do, I always carry at least a half a dozen or so bags with me. And I've made it a point now, and I challenge the church that I used to go to do this, and we pass out the bags or the boxes back in to give to people. So when you see a homeless person, you pass it. Make a U-turn and go back to them. If you're going to be late to church, be late to church, because what you're passing up is an opportunity.
That is true.
An opportunity. And people would say, but then I have to make a U-turn and sit for that light for 5 minutes and wait and make another U-turn. And I said, whose time is it?
What you tell them is say, what about that man spending an eternity in hell?
Yeah.
I think it's worth 5 minutes.
5 minutes, and that's what I found. One of the things that really kept me in this ministry was exactly that, was we don't take the time. Like we should, like Andre, going to the nurse. And so many people, I heard he say it, I can't handle the smell. You know, it is difficult. But do you think that a person in there might not be able to handle hell? And you might be the one that can witness to him. So, you know, God didn't say it was going to be easy. He just said that we're supposed to go out and do the work that he... I don't like to use the word work. You rarely will ever hear me say God wants you to do anything. But God doesn't want Andre to do that. God expects Andre to do that work. I think he expects all of us to do the work that we don't want to do.
He didn't say, occupy till I come, just as idle words.
Yeah, he challenges us to do that work.
Have you and your wife volunteer on Free Food Friday?
Yeah, that's fine. I'm gonna go this afternoon.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
When is it?
Happy.
Is it today?
Today, yeah.
Oh, good. What time?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. It starts.
Yeah, I'm gonna get there probably.
When do they get a crowd?
What time does almost start getting there?
Yes, to work. What time does it
get? I think they get there at 5.
About 5. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's fine. Back in that other building.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
You guys have any use? I got about 20 pounds of decaf. Can you use that at all?
I wouldn't have seen
decaf coffee. Dunkin' Donuts decaf. I have about 20 pounds.
Well, I have a testimony. The other day, because I was going on, I thought I was going to Barney Basement to get some food to make up bags, okay? I go there and I buy these cheese crackers, okay? Handy little thing to give out to the homeless because cheese and crackers. And I did get the guy to give me a little bit of a discount. He gave me 10% on these little bottles of Nestle Quick chocolate. When I come out of the place, there's a lady coming out there and she's wanting me to give her a ride. And I mean, she's really, you can tell she's in bad shape. So, actually, she came to me before I went in there, and I said, I'll be back out, okay? She was waiting out there, and I ended up praying with her. She was a believer, okay, but she just hit hard times. I asked her how she ended up in the street. She said, bad relationship. Okay. But I spent about a half an hour, 45 minutes praying with her. And here I thought I was going to Barton Basement to get food. Well, the Lord had another plan. But of course, I had to tell her she wanted me to give her a ride. And I said, no, that explains something here. My situation right now, I can't do that. But you know, I said, I'm going to pray. And she said, oh, that's even better. So, I mean, God will put you where He wants to put you. Exactly. Now, I started making up the bags at my church the other day. I got 6 bags and put a pack of those crackers in there, a cookie, you know, some of those big cookies that you buy. I bought some of those too. And a bottle in there, and I have 6 bags on the counter. I told everybody in the church, 6 bags over there. Anybody wants to put 4 bags in there? Because anybody can take them out, that's fine. Well, I'll take them. And then I went over to the bookstore last night and talked to Julie. She's going to let me put a box in there to collect them. So if anybody wants them, she's going to be collecting that. We just put plastic bags or whatever, make them up. But you know, we've got the Pinellas Park Parade coming up. And a lot of people don't realize, but a lot of those people are in that parade, are homeless people.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you got, they're there because there's something going on. Okay, they're there. There's candy being thrown.
It's rather obvious that they're homeless and they got their
You know. And the thing is, most of them are trying to hide though because the police are out.
That's what I was going to ask you, if you guys have had any opposition when you're out there trying to feed them or whatever. Because I had a young lady that on Facebook or whatever that I know or whatever like that, and her little millennial friend was out there feeding them, bringing sandwiches and stuff to them every day or whatever like that, and the cops stopped them, told them to knock it off and said you have to have a food permit or whatever like that, and that she was going to get ticketed and taken to jail if she got caught.
We've been doing this a couple of weeks, so I'm going to see you.
I have a man,
but I
and it works for me.
What is it?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I moved out of St. Pete County to Myers Lake, and a cop pulled up and just ready to run us out. And I walked up and put the badge on him. I said, hey man, you know, if you don't want us to do it, we won't do this, you know, but I don't want to, you know, put you in a spot.
I have had.
And he ended up saying, hey man, I didn't see it, I'm out of here. And then every week after that, we would go, and as soon as he would see me, he'd wave and make that turn.
Over 20 years I've been doing that, never have I ever had anybody tell me anything.
Yeah. They do sometimes.
And if they do, I say, look, man, I'm going to do it anyway, brother, because that's my constitutional right to do that.
Now, if you want me to go to your jail, go to your jail. I don't care. I'm not afraid of
it. Pete's put in the back room because the mayor.
Well, Craig's
the mayor been, Craig, right now is really went, down on homeless people.
He doesn't want them laying around in the streets and stuff like that, sleeping underneath stuff and everything. And he used a young woman that walked from her insurance building and got attacked in one of the little things as a example of the homeless being down there, and basically tried to chase them all off. He actually offered them a bus ticket. Yeah. If they would take a one-way bus ticket 100 miles away. No, 100 miles away in any direction.
Yeah. Well, even before Christmas, some of the other mayors tried to do that. They take them.
They don't fix the problem.
They don't fix the problem.
They send them them all above the police place up there in Fellowship Park Boulevard.
Stop by and talk to Jim. We were at the outstate bar.
It's been a long time since I've done that. My wife and I used to go to the park. She sang from her friends and stuff, and then they give out food. Well, they put a stop to us doing that a long time ago, 20 years ago.
Where is it?
Lynch Park. Probably. And the reason being was they wanted us to pay I forgot what it was, $500 or $1,000 to clean the park up afterwards. And that was their justification for telling us we couldn't do it. The group we were with. I don't know if others have brought into that.
This is what you put in your bag?
No.
It used to be a new group. They used to basically sleep in that little, you know how they have the little coves and the like little water spots?
Oh, yeah.
There's one right outside of Wawa's. Back behind Jimmy's Sports Bar, Christina's restaurant. And they used to just see them laying there. Dead bodies or whatever like that. So I used to every time I went to the exchange or somewhere, buy a case of water and keep the water in the car so that it's air conditioned so it'd be cool and get stuff and everything. And I was there one day giving them like the little bags of cookies I get from Sam's Club in a box of 30 or 50 or whatever like that. And I was giving them cookies and water out there one time to try to get a cop with his lights at me, like, move on.
So, you know, like, for us, when we start doing the coffee, if you guys go out and buy coffee, donate us coffee to our coffee business. But that's the biggest thing that we'll need, and then we'll make up sandwiches, or if Andre is making soup, we'll make a sandwich. We'll take it out there, or whatever, you know. Periodically, we'll do that, you know, and depending on that. But anyway, it'll develop again like a different tool, you know.
5'10". A 5'10" window was sleeping, but the woman next to her was on a suicide route. So I'm outside the room, and the CNA goes, "Hey, suicide watch."
Girl, just take her.
So, you know, I didn't have no clue, but I went to go visit someone else. So I end up about 20 minutes talking with Elizabeth. She was 73 years old. And she's on a suicide watch. I don't know why. I think maybe she had a stroke. So her lips and voice was very augmented, very difficult to understand. And I just talked to her about her name, which means, Elizabeth means consecrated to God or given to God. And, you know, she was a Catholic, like she was born a Catholic, and I don't know if you can ever be born a Catholic, but it's some of the understanding, and I tried to ask her, well, were you ever confirmed, or did you have your first communion, or I try to get onto their territory where they can understand about Christ and what Christ has done. And so you spend this time with someone who is maybe not even capable of understanding, but that's not our problem. Our issue is to just share Christ and the love of Jesus. So I prayed with her, touched her hand, you know, just touched her hand gently. And the nurse outside says, you know, I just want to tell you, I have been listening to you for years. And I love the stories that you tell. Of course, I sing a lot in that. I didn't sing this particular woman. But here's an opportunity. You went for something else. And that's the hook. You know? And you don't even know. But you're there. And then you buy up an opportunity to witness Christ. Listen, I have so many things wrong in my life. If I concentrated on all the wrong things in my life, I would never do anything. But you know what? I have one thing that's right, and that's Christ.
You know, you witnessed to that nurse too.
Oh, yeah.
You may not know what you said.
Oh, absolutely. She's, you know, she's been a nurse for 20 years. And, you know, one of the things that people who have been around for a while, they've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Most of the time, they've seen the ugly.
Ugly, yeah. A lot more ugly than anything else.
So, I had another testimony from my sister who I bring juice to. And she's got MS for 33 years. You know, I've known her from the consulate, and then she moved to another nursing home. So I continued bringing the juice to her. And she said to me last Sunday, she says, you know, I don't know any man in this world who would ever bring me juice for 4 years. Three times a week. And she says, you are a kind man. I says, can you talk to my wife? Because she don't think I'm so kind. But it's interesting that, you know, see, we labor in this world that is anti-God, anti-Jesus. And God says, go out, go and make disciples. You know, disciples are, it's long term. You know, I'm not, you know, I've been in enough Baptist churches that they would focus on win souls, win souls, win souls. Listen, you can win all the souls you want, and you have no idea whatever happened with them. But you know what? When you make disciples, then you make disciples that go and witness for the one who saved them and touched their lives, because they saw experientially that somebody loved them beyond themselves. And listen, you talk about this life, like 2 Timothy chapter 3 talks about, the characteristic of mankind is to be lovers of self and not lovers of God. So, you know, whatever you do, do wholeheartedly and look for those opportunities, because they're there.
You hit on something, you get into this world that's so harsh and bad. And you sometimes, and I know I do, sometimes more so out in this world than I do in my own home.
Sure.
And in my own home, I should be doing that too.
Oh, absolutely.
And I find myself being more behind the heart of home than I am out with somebody that I don't know.
You know, my wife and I have been going through a struggle lately. My answer and all that. And I know she's going through a lot of emotions and a lot of doubts. But you know what? That's good. Because it gives us an opportunity to, let's get real. Let's get real. And so we, like, you know, I didn't go to church Sunday or Sunday before that. And I'm tired of going to church. And to be honest with you, I saw a preacher Sunday.
And the reason is, you know, it's just that to me, it's the same old humbug. And, you know, people pretending that they're this or they're that. And there are people that want to do stuff within the body. Anyway, with all that, God has led me to, I've been listening to Jensen Franklin. Man, that dude is incredible. So we, I listened to him one night. I was listening to him. I put it on and I fell asleep. But I don't know what time I got up. I guess that thing kept going around. And about 3 in the morning, boy, he out there screaming and raving. I'm on the wall. You know? And so I heard some great, a great sermon that I needed to hear. So my wife and I, we sat there Sunday at this time. And to come to reality of something. And it was good for us. And, you know, because sometimes when you're struggling or you're going through stuff, they see one side and you're not really getting together at home in the scripture. You know, but we're said to be together too. You know, spirit. And so it's been good. It's been good. You know, it's not been good, but I mean, you know, because her heart wants to get crying and stuff like that. Now we gotta just trust in God. God said, be still and know that the word of God is getting in that. And if, you know, we speak one thing and do another thing, what are we doing? We're not doing anything. So, anyway, so in that aspect, it's been good because I know in my heart that, you know, it's right around that corner. You know, and so how long do you wait, you know? But,
as long as God has a way.
You know, God helps you to get through your own, because you got to get through your own stuff, your own problems.
What Andre said just a few minutes ago really hit me hard, because my wife every now and then will say, you know, we can get along good for a period of time, and then all of a sudden, she says, you're mean. You can be mean, and yet not physically mean, but she said, mean. You can be me. And I'm thinking to myself, what you said was, I don't think I've ever had anybody out here on the street that I've ministered to ever tell me that you're me.
But your wife is there too.
And that opens my eyes up and said, hello, you know, I know that if I can do it out on the street, why can't I do it at home? And it's a reality check, what you said, a smack in the back of the head, saying,
How many times, I don't have time to do this right now, honey.
Yeah.
But get a phone call.
Stop what you're doing and go.
And you're out the door.
Yeah.
So they see that. And they're more important than her.
Well, that's part of what she calls me. You know, because you can do it for somebody else, but you can't do it for me. And I just, he just hit me in the back of the head.
Oh, I know, girl.
Well, you know, that's the saying, is that you always hurt the ones you love. Because the ones you love, you expect, and they love you, so you expect them to just like
you.
They understand.
It to happen,
that you expect them to understand.
Okay.
What is that saying? One man sharpens the
other.
Hello.
What I think of not long time ago, early in my marriage, there was a song that they played, or early in my. Coming to the Lord, actually, there's a song called Two Sets of Joneses. You hear that song? You know, and it was a story about two young families both starting off in life. One had everything,
You know, it gave them money and had everything. So there wasn't a struggle so much. And the other one was just constantly, and I mean, even so far as his people at work would come and take up a collection to help pay for the birth of their child, because he didn't have money and stuff like that. And in the end, you know, the one that had the strife and what we would consider a curse in our life, you know, were the ones that were blessed, because when these hard times come along, they were more quick to handle it. Yeah. You know, and it's the same, it works the same in our relationships with our wives and stuff too. You know,
I mean,
we all like to be hunky-dory and brave and everything, but
it seems like it ended up being that way.
Yeah. You know, sometimes out in the future, God's got a purpose for you going through these struggles and stuff, and it makes you stronger, actually.
I went to a memorial yesterday. Lady Dubinsky, we call her Mrs. Booty. Her husband, Mr. and Mrs. Booty.
I think we used to smoke them.
Yeah, that too. And when we first came to the Lord, and we started going to the one church where they were there, and Art was a prick. He was one of those guys that tell you how and when. But he was funny, and his wife was. And so that couple, that lady became my wife's spiritual mom, and Art, I always had to deal with Art, but he's a good guy. I mean, he just tell you what it is. It's funny. Both of them have passed away since then. Haven't seen him for years, you know, and his daughter. Their daughter called us, and they wanted us to be there, because, we were with them a lot, and we just went to the Bible studies in the home, and stuff like that, that's when, you know, we actually started church, and I miss those days, man. I miss the days that we go to people's homes, you know, and have Bible study, visit every week, and you feel those relationships. That's why I love, I'm a firm believer of home groups. You know, I'm a strong believer of home groups. And you feel this relationship with people like that, and we've had them in my house for years. But it's just good to be there, and to hear the testimony of this lady, and what they left behind. The testimony, the ministry that they have done. That's good. Yeah, they get somebody has some good things about somebody, you know? And it was good. I enjoyed being there.
You talk about the home group, they almost can become a cool, accountability department, a co-educational type accountability department. When you meet in a group of like 6 to 8 people, you're going to begin to build that relationship. And I start checking on them. I'm like, how are you doing this week? Or check yourself. How are you doing? Same, you know, and you begin to do that. You don't find that in church. You know, churches, I laugh at that. You know, I preach to a couple of churches myself. And when I stand up there, and I told the minister of our church in Indiana, I said, "Well, I finished the sermon today." I said, "Did you hear?" They went away. What are you talking about? And I said, "Well, I was really spirit led, and I was
allowing God to speak through me. I could just feel it going right over their heads. They were not getting it. And it's because they come for one purpose, and that's to attend church for him, go home, tell her wife, well, I went to church today. And they weren't going to worship God. They were going because it was on their checklist. And I just saw it, it just hurt so much.
Yeah. You know, one thing about ministry that I've seen over the years, you know, if I had advice to give anybody, will be yourself. You know how many of us try to copy other people, other ministries? Don't do that. God created you as an individual. And your ministry is for you. It's something you can do, no one else can do. You know? And I'll use myself as an example. Years ago, years ago, I tried to, the guy that really was, I'd watch him, he'd just sing on the inside of me, because I could tell him, of all people, if you say his name, you'll probably go, Jimmy Swagger. Okay?
There is a river that flows from deep within. There is a fountain that cleanses my soul from sin.
I mean, I could really identify with his preaching and singing the whole nine yards. So I went, well, here this ministry has their own college opening up. You can go there and become part of their groups and whatever. Wife sang, she may be able to sing. You know, with them and all this, I had all these plans. And what I wanted it to be like, and you know, I started failing. And God told me, you know, don't place your eyes on man. You know, and I'm not. Everyone makes mistakes. I understand that. You know, but when that big mistake comes, because God had dealt with me on that issue of setting man up instead of setting him up. You know, it kept me from crashing. And so many people, and you know, we've been part of the ministry where they put the guy in the pulpit almost like God. And then they fall, they just sit. You got church divisions and separations and all
this stuff.
But you know, we're all human.
You know, back when I started, we were strong with our home group. And they, for me, they work. I've had it for, I have one for 5 years in my house. And later on, I always had them. In fact, I'm going to start one again. But what happens is, while some of the people, some of the churches kind of pull back from it, that some people use that platform to stop their own church.
Yeah.
Or to steal people or take people from somebody else's church. You know, and that's always that problem. So the pastors would get all crunchy or crazy about it, you know. So dude, if they don't go, they don't go anywhere. And you know, those people that do that, we're stuck in on that for a long time anyway. But it's good, it's good when you get together, because that when you build those relationships, especially when you're a new town, you have a race, you know, like in this area, you get to meet people, relationships, you're able to help one another within the group and stuff like that, encourage one another and stuff. It's good, it's good stuff. You know, I know back in the day, you guys used to have a bunch of people over your house and all that. You guys did the music stuff, you know?
Well, we did that for quite a while. We did a couple of books. We did Purpose Driven Life. It took a year and a half. They wanted us to do it in 4 or 6 weeks. And
4 or 6 weeks?
Yeah, you know. Listen,
that's the first chapter.
Yeah. And so a year and a half, and then we did Wild at Heart, Captivating. And it just, you know, the reasons to get together. We did concerts out front of our house. We'd have as many as 150 people the front of the house, full band, line, all that stuff. And those are all seasons of life, you know. Well, now we're in a different season. And look for those opportunities, because it's not like it was. It is changing. It's always changing. And so, you know, change. You know, my father said this to me. I think he was about 70 years old, and he says, you know, if you do not change when it's time to change, someone will make the change for you, and you won't like it. You make the change, and whatever that change is, whatever point in your life. Listen, if you can't walk so good, get a ranch house. Not a two-story. You know, if you can't go to the bathroom so good, get a bidet. Or, yeah, well, you know, see.
The French thing is porch.
It's a glorified water fountain.
Yeah.
On the pole. I think of the tubs today, right? They sit in the tub, fills up, $10,000. That's 1 month in a nursing home. Spend it. Stay at home as long as you can. If it kept you home and you had to spend $10,000-$15,000 to stay home and save you another 2 years from going into that place, spend it. Take the mortgage, take the reverse mortgage, anything to stay out of the nursing home.